Is that really your idea of how to run a newspaper?
I don't know how to run a newspaper, Mr. Thatcher. I just try everything I can think of.
You realize you were talking to a journalist.
I'll tell you what, Fonzie. Since you're such an investigative reporter, you figure it out.
If I reveal my sources, you wouldn't talk to me.
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
Come on, Elliot. The public has a right to know a few things.
This is Two J's in a Pod. I'm Mary Ellen Murphy from WGHN Radio.
And I'm Sarah Leach from the Ottawa News Network.
How was your week?
Long.
It was long?
Very long.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff
really
going on.
Busy. I lots of things, lots of stories and whatnot. You go first. What do you want to talk about?
Well, we had another lawsuit that had a new development this week that was on Monday. And this is the one that was filed in October of 24, alleging that Ottawa County was not granting FOIAs according to state law.
Okay.
And what I found really interesting is that, so this is the first hearing that we had, because these things take time to schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being heard by an Ottawa court judge. It's actually being heard by an Allegan court judge, because all of the Ottawa County judges recused themselves in all of the lawsuits that have been filed against
right.
the board. And the judge seemingly indicated that she is not likely to grant access to public officials' personal devices to be subject to FOIA.
Okay.
And that's important because it's a bit alarming to journalists because that sort of gives the green light for public officials to conduct public business on their private devices if they know that they're not going to be subject to review.
It does.
And they can keep things secret. Now, conversely, the county is arguing the opposite, saying that, well, this is going to send a chilling effect on people running for public office. No one's going to want to run for public office because they're going to feel like they're always under a microscope and that their personal devices could be subject to review at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a little bit of an overstatement because that's not really how FOIA works. We heard a lot of insider baseball about how FOIA works.
Right.
I am a passionate, subscriber to this kind of conversation, but I know that the average Joe isn't.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to FOIA. So, I mean, but I know that there are people, there are many people in the community that have FOIA.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's just the principle of the thing. Even if you don't do it regularly, it's just, do you really want a scenario where there are decisions that are being made in your name that you're never going to understand or get any additional information on? Because that's what public officials do. They make decisions about our tax dollars. They make decisions about where the unit of government that they represent stands on social issues. There's all sorts of decisions that they make for you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you want to know how that happens? You want to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah, you do. You're right. That's interesting. I'll have to talk to Greg Van Workum on that and see how he feels about that. Because isn't that in Lansing they're talking about as well?
Yeah. So this is something that is also frustrating, too, is that we saw several years under Democratic leadership where they were pushing for transparency laws, updates to the Freedom of Information Act laws, the Open Meetings Act, the so-called the Sunshine Laws in Michigan. And that never happened. We thought that we were going to see reform finally. I mean, these things date back. They went into effect right after Watergate because they were in reaction to Watergate.
Wow.
And they haven't been updated since.
Wow.
So Michigan is only one of two states that does not allow people to request emails from their state legislators or the governor's office.
That's nuts.
Yeah. We get a D or an F in transparency every single year from all the watchdogs. And we constantly complain about, reform, reform, reform. And a lot of promises get made and then it's never delivered.
I did talk with State Rep Greg Van Workum about it, and he was concerned that, his constituents' information would get out there.
Yeah,
and I was like,
I think that that's a little bit of a red herring. I think that what they're really concerned about is that they want to be grandfathered in so that whatever communications and activities that they've been up to for the past several years, because a lot of these people are career politicians, they'll spend up to 12 years in the legislature. They don't want their dirty laundry getting aired. And there's ways of getting around that where you can be grandfathered in, or there's a certain period of time for active legislators to be exempt.
Mm-hmm.
All of those sorts of things can be worked around, but they just choose not to because they just don't want to.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It's not hard. You know, 48 other states have been doing it just fine.
Very interesting. And in speaking of Lansing, there was a protest this week. There were protests all over the country.
Yes, they're protesting Project 2025 mm-hmm. and a lot of the executive orders that we're seeing coming out of Washington. It's quite breathtaking in terms of scope, all of the things that are happening every single day. It's really difficult to keep up.
It is.
From dismantling the Department of Education to the raids in the sanctuary cities and stopping federal monies going into sanctuary cities. There were pauses in Medicaid payments. There's just a lot of confusion going on.
I can't keep up.
I know. That's not even like a third of what happened in the last week.
Yeah, I just can't keep up. I covered an apartment complex, an affordable apartment complex in Spring Lake this week, which was awesome.
That's
the landing
great.
At Spring Lake. I was really honored. Tom Reinsma from Skolten Fant reached out to WGHN and said, listen, this is going to be happening. There's going to be a ribbon cutting, but I want to give you the local story, how this all started.
Yeah.
And so he had a conversation with Kim Kroll at Four Points for Successful Aging about 8 years ago about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it took 8 years to get this to happen with Samaritas. And it was just so exciting to see them cut that ribbon. It's a beautiful complex.
I think we've seen a lot of conversations about how to solve the housing problem. I mean, the housing problem's everywhere. But, just from my time in Holland over the past 15 years, the conversation largely revolved around let's just create more inventory. And what that meant was we're going to create them at market price level. So it's like the top end of the spectrum. And so they thought, well, if we just have, more people move up that ladder, then the people who need to get at the bottom rung of the ladder will be able to move in. But the problem is you need more bottom rungs. And so that's, I'm just kind of curious as to how Spring Lake decided to tackle it.
53 one bedroom and two bedroom apartments are available.
Nice.
Now, I believe 8 of those will be used by the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians mm-hmm. because they were part of this.
Yeah.
The ARPA funds, Roger Bergman worked really, really hard to get those funds.
Right.
So it's a beautiful complex. They're leasing right now. It'll be interesting to see, how this all pans out. But they have a nice library in there. It's all brand new. So
yeah,
something's
great.
Really brand new like that. And I felt like it was very well done. The units are very well done. And you couldn't hear a lot of outside noise. So mm-hmm. maybe... it's not paper thin walls.
Right.
Is what I wanted to state.
Quality construction.
There you go. There you go. So Commissioners Kyers and Josh Berger were out there. Everybody was out there. So that's mm-hmm. what I did this week. And it was nice that Tom Reinsma reached out to us to give us that local angle on the story.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Because it all started here, with a conversation about affordable housing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
It's good to see those conversations continue.
Yeah, it is.
I think that just something that hasn't quite come to pass yet, but I think that we're going to see more developments in the pipeline moving in the municipalities in the county in the next couple of years. I know of at least one that's probably going to go before the county board of commissioners within the next couple months.
So, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to see this development happening.
I just feel like the word affordable is different than the word low income.
Yeah. It's been kind of used as a boogeyman sort of mm-hmm. term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that people get the wrong idea, but honestly, it's what people are able. The price of housing is ridiculous. I mean, even for people who are secure in their incomes, I mean, we would all argue that housing is expensive.
Yeah, I rent, and I believe, and I split my rent with my partner. But if I was paying it on my own, I would be paying 70% of my income for where mm-hmm. I live in Grand Rapids. It's atrocious.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's no laundry facility. So we have to go to the laundromat.
Oh.
Like I'm in college again, schlepping laundry.
I do not miss those days.
Oh, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I just sit there and people watch.
Although I still eat ramen noodles from time to time.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So back in the day, I used to have an Amoco gas card, and I would feed everybody at the radio station on my Amoco gas card. I would. I would. We were so poor.
Yep.
All right. Did you attend? There was an event at the Unicorn Tavern this week.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What was that all about?
It was a panel discussion on Christian nationalism and, I'm going to forget all of the panelists' names, but there were four of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting discussion about kind of what it means, how it's defined. And so I think that casually I would describe this as favoring Christianity and sort of weaponizing it in a way where it kind of like takes over the secular foundational pieces of our country.
Got it.
So we have this whole separation of church and state, and that sort of flies out the window in the context of this conversation.
Okay.
You know, putting the Ten Commandments back in schools, you know, requiring people to teach creationism in schools, like all that kind of stuff would arguably fall under that umbrella. And so the panelists talked a lot about the history, how this has been used several times in several different ways through movements throughout the world, in the Roman times, dating back to the Roman times even.
Really?
Yeah, that there was a "Make Rome Great Again" slogan.
You got to be kidding me.
And it was really interesting to kind of hear that this isn't new. It's a tactic that works. I think that nationalism is an interesting tool that people throughout history have used for good and bad outcomes. And so arguably kind of taking the nationalism and then kind of hybridizing it with empowering Christians and this whole, you know, we need to fight the anti-Christian movement. This is also going back to Project 2025. I think that there's a lot of concerning conversations that are happening at a national level that are trickling down locally. So
okay. The
one thing that I would say that that was a little lacking, and I'm not trying to criticize the event, is what are actionable steps in terms of what people can do.
So I was just going to ask you, how do you fight it?
Yeah, if we see this behavior, or if we're upset, and we want to take some actionable steps, what would those be? So I'm trying to, I'm working on a story. I did go and cover the event. It's taken me a couple days to get my arms around it, but I do want to be productive in the in the way that I cover it. So I'm hoping to be able to have some of those answers soon.
All right, good. Very, very good. Yeah. What else did you do this week? Because I know you were busy.
Yeah.
Pulling your hair out.
See. Yeah, we had some protests that were in Holland.
What were those about?
That is against the immigration policies.
Okay.
So there's a group that's called By Any Means Necessary West Michigan. They were protesting yesterday, peaceful protests in Centennial Park. And so I'm talking to those organizers today. It's kind of a whirlwind right now where people are kind of catching their breath and organizing against what I would call describe as kind of chaotic behavior coming out of Washington. It's a little difficult to know like how to feel and how to react. So I think that we're going to see this for the next several weeks, if not months.
Yeah.
And I think it'll eventually settle down where people kind of figure out like what their strategies are and whether they support those policies or want to fight to change them.
How are your interns working out at Ottawa News Network?
They're doing great. One of them came to the event at the Unicorn on Tuesday.
Okay.
And they're working on they submitted their first draft of stories. And we did some initial edits. And so they're working on polishing those up. But I'm really pleased because we're not doing simple previews and event coverage. I mean, one of them is writing about that housing development that I'm anticipating is going to go before the Board of Commissioners.
Really?
One is talking about how the tipped wage laws are affecting local restaurant workers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not. I'm not shy about, you know, getting them in there.
That's good.
And
that's how you learn.
Dirty, yeah.
You learn.
And real reporting, you know, because
right?
I don't think that, you know, these are adults. They're capable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're able to pull off this kind of coverage.
That's really good to hear.
Yeah.
Do you think it's worth? Have you reached out to the local schools and what they may be doing about ICE and immigration?
Yeah, you know,
I wondered if it was.
In my experience, they don't like to be openly. They don't want to have that as an open discussion because they're really worried about parents getting upset if they say the wrong thing. And, you know, depending on where people fall on the political spectrum, they're trying to just help everybody and they don't want to be a polarizing influence in that conversation.
Okay.
I do know that some of the districts have gone through trainings in terms of educating families on what their constitutional rights are one way or the other. And I think that is the role that the districts want to play. But they don't want to be interviewed. They don't want to, you know, and I get it.
I do too.
But it's frustrating because you really want to know what would happen if ICE knocked on your door one day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my understanding that you know, there's no Know Your Rights materials that are being distributed from a lot of different very credible organizations like Lighthouse Immigrant Advocates. Mm-hmm. They have a Know Your Rights pamphlet that they're handing out. It's my understanding that, you know, you can't really, even if it's a public property like a school, I don't think that any police agency can just walk in and just start, you know, hauling people into offices. I think that there's a process and a procedure, and it's I really encourage people to research what that could look like and how it might affect you, so that you are prepared in case that ever happens.
Yeah. What a week.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
I'm just
2025 is exhausting.
I know. But by the time Friday rolls around, I am so tired of the sound of my own voice.
Well, when I saw that it was Groundhog's Day, I was like, "What? It's Groundhog Year." January was 700 days long, and I thought, "How is it only February 2nd?"
Oh, you're right about that. I'm telling you.